The idea of body cams on the TTC, the idea of getting some labor agreements tied up with I's dotted, T's crossed. Who better to speak to about it than Toronto City Councillor for Ward 23, Scarborough North, and TTC Chair Jamal Myers. Nice to have you back on the show. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
We book you days in advance, and then all of a sudden all this news falls right in our lap, and you're like, oh, great. But you know, you're the TTC chair. It is part of the job. Let's talk about the labor issue with the electrical and trade workers. Where is this at? There's potential for a strike deadline, 12:01 a.m., April 22nd. And this QP2 group, Jamal, has been without a contract since April 22. Where do things stand?
So we are currently negotiating. Both parties are actively negotiating and working hard towards agreement. I will emphasize that we have secured agreement with one of our other unions, 5089. And yesterday at the TTC board, we also got an agreement with another union, Local Lodge 235, which are our millwrights. So I'm confident that if we continue negotiations through the regular give and take of a bargaining, that we will come to a deal before April 22nd.
What does the 5089 do for people listening who don't know what that, what is that? Sorry. What do those jobs entail?
That's so okay. Those are our special constables and fare inspectors.
Okay. So you're getting close. It sounds like a lot of these deals, almost similar to how the education unions go. Are you hoping to knock these off in successive order? It's you're obviously talking to different unions at different times to try and get agreements signed.
Yes, exactly. So we're trying to get do these in order in terms of which ones are the most likely to be achieved, which ones do we think will take the most time, and we've been going from there. Obviously, TTC resources are not infinite, so we can't simultaneously negotiate with all six of our unions at the same time. That would be a stretch. So what we're doing is we're really just handling them one at a time, and we've been successful. And, you know, credit to the unions. The unions have been reasonable. They're bargaining in good faith. So I'm confident that we can find an agreement.
Is there a TTC drivers union that is looking for a deal as well, or has one been signed with that group?
So that is ATU 113, and that is our largest union. So that's the drivers and the maintenance people. So that's about 11 to 13,000 people. And obviously that is the bulk of the TTC's workforce.
And are they in negotiation right now with you?
They are in negotiations right now, not directly with me, but with our TTC bargaining team.
Yeah. There's always debate, before we move on, about the designation of the TTC as an essential service. Give our audience a sense why, well, a court ruling struck that down, you know, almost over a decade ago. But give me sort of the more cons as to pros as to why that would be the case, why it would not be an essential service.
Well, I mean, it's not an essential service in terms of, you know, life and death isn't usually a result of a TTC strike as it would be for example, police officers, firefighters, nurses, doctors. It would be a massive inconvenience. It would cause a lot of economic uncertainty, but it's not the same scale as, for example, something that has an immediate impact on, you know, people's safety or sense of well-being. That being said, we are doing everything possible to make sure both sides, to make sure that there is not a strike. Neither side wants a strike. We both realize we have a common interest in, you know, making sure that people can get to where they're going on time, making sure that we're providing the public a sense of, you know, reliability, comfort, safety. So we're all committed to working on a deal.
Now, I think the phrasing it has gotten people a little bit confused, so it's great that we have you to clarify it. Many headlines have blared, you know, the TTC's moving forward with a new use of force policy, but there's a lot of complexities and intricacies to that, and they include these body-worn cameras we've been talking about a good chunk of the morning. Again, pros and cons. What are some of the pros with this new policy, and what do you hope to achieve from it?
So there was a previous use of force policy in place that didn't address certain issues in terms of, you know, for example, accounting for bias, accounting for excessive force being used. So this policy initiated out of a 2017 ombudsman report looking into an incident where there was an altercation between some of our fare inspectors and a rider who was a young Black man. And it was deemed to be that the force was excessive. So in 2019, the ombudsman made 26 recommendations. One of them was a use of force policy. One of them was a use of discretion policy. One of them was a body-worn camera policy. The union was very supportive of body-worn cameras. They liked the fact that there would be a record of what the exact interaction was. We did a little bit of negotiation on the use of force policy. If you may recall, this originally came to the board in December, and the board sent it back for further negotiation with the union. We were able to come to an agreement, and that's why it was passed yesterday. The use of discretion policy was a bit more controversial. This will be the first use of discretion policy that's ever been in place for a law enforcement agency, I believe, in Ontario, if not Canada. So there's a bit of hesitation on the union's part in accepting this. Where we landed was that violation of a use of discretion policy in of itself would not constitute, would not make someone liable for punishment. It would only be in conjunction with something else. So, for example, a violation of the use of force policy as well.
And you've made the point as well that the use of force is for self-defense or protect members of the public. The body cameras are probably a key reason why many of your inspectors want this, because then it doesn't become a he said scenario. The evidence is laid out directly as to when, you know, hands are utilized, or they've got to restrain somebody, or they've got to protect somebody who's in a bad situation.
Exactly. It just protects all parties involved and makes sure there's an impartial record of what exactly happened. And this will become increasingly important as we start looking for ways to cut down on fare evasion. You're just going to see more interactions with the public, between our fare inspectors and the public. So we really want to make sure that we're protecting our officers and protecting the public to make sure that, you know, these interactions are happening in a professional way.
I know I cringed when I saw the number. $124 million is what the TTC says fare evasion cost them just last year in 2023. When would you get a sense in 2024, Jamal, as to how much you're recouping back on that when you're actually enforcing fares?
So we're actually trying to develop the policy as to what happens right now. So a lot of people have said, you know, clamp down, start ticketing them. The issue is when you ticket someone for not paying a fare, that revenue doesn't actually go to the TTC. I believe it either goes to the city or to the province. So we really have an incentive to make sure people pay their fares. So we have a policy where if the officer asks you to pay your fare, they stop you. About 30 to 50% will, you know, tap their fare. But there's also, you know, we have to look at, you know, what are our bus drivers doing. So I'll give you an example. I was on the bus yesterday, and three men got on the back, and they didn't tap, and the bus driver stopped, didn't move. He kept the door open, and he said, "Yo, you three in the back, are you gonna tap?" And everyone's eyes immediately started staring at these three guys, and, you know, immediately they all started tapping. And that's really what we need, because there's no way our fare inspectors are going to be able to look at every single bus stop, bus route on the city. We really need, you know, every TTC employee to make it their duty to make sure that people are tapping. That bus driver, his name was Chris, by the way, you know, handled that situation in a polite, professional way. And he made sure that, you know, the customers felt like, okay, I'm paying my fare, and they're making sure that everybody else is paying their fare. And for those three individuals who didn't pay their fare, they know that now they will get called out if they don't pay their fare. So it was a win-win for everyone.
Is that an odd sight, or do you see that more on the regular, obviously, than you'd like? One time you might say is too many. Everybody should pay their fair share. How often does that happen when you ride the bus?
Seeing people bored without paying, I see that pretty often. Seeing the driver actually say something, I rarely see that, which is why I actually went up, and after the bus parked at the station, I went up and actually thanked him.
Wow. I got to leave it there, but more conversations as you get closer to hopefully signing deals before these strike deadlines. Jamal, thanks so much for the time today.
Thank you, and have a great weekend.
There's Jamal Myers joining us, chair of the TTC.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.